Hey, everybody. Welcome to What Would Leland Do? I am here today with my friend Isaac and Adam from years ago. Grew up with them around in high school and friends with them a little bit into college. Today, we're going to be talking about a segment of Jordan Peterson's podcast. Do you guys want to say hi? Maybe a quick introduction about yourselves?
Ladies first, Isaac.
All right. You got it. Yeah, I'm Isaac. So went to Eagan High School with David, and I got a bachelor's degree in psychology and philosophy, and now I'm going to graduate school for a doctorate in psychology. So that's kind of my, those are my credentials.
Yeah, I'm going to get schooled. This is exciting.
Yeah, what's up, everybody? I'm Adam. I'm David's friend from way back in high school, and I live in Austin, Texas. I'm a glassblower, so I kind of approach, I guess, with credentials that are from an artistic standpoint. I just have a high school diploma. I'm not like a formally educated man, but, you know, I try to hang with the boys and like to think about things greater than myself. So when David asked me to come on the podcast, I was like, sure, let's do it, baby. So
I'll vouch for Adam as a thinker.
Yeah, and I will too, Adam. And I've had a bunch of really good conversations.
Yeah, definitely.
For those people who are listening who might be confused, in high school, I went by the name David. And so my wife actually calls me David. In high school and college, after college, I went by Leland. It does confuse people, but they know me as David. So that's just a back in the day thing. David's fine. Leland's fine. Doesn't make a difference. Cool. So jumping into the podcast. So I had a couple notes. Are there any notes that jumped out with you guys that you want to start with? Or do you want me to just to kick it off, go in order here?
Do your thing.
So, all right.
Go ahead.
No. So the first thing that he talks about is that you are not the master of your home. So, That there are sub personalities that are fighting within you for dominance and trying to, you know, vie for control, and that's a battle going on sort of in everybody. What about that jumps out at you guys?
Sounds like a pretty old idea. I mean, it's been around for a long time. There's always like, you know, I mean, the oldest idea in philosophy is that there's like an emotive and kind of a cognitive side that are always pulling you in different directions. And then I think in like more of the psychoanalytic perspective, as that came around, they started addressing things like the subconscious with Freud talking about the id and ego and superego.
Well, what's interesting is that the Greeks talk about it. And I think because Isaac, because you're into these circles now, you're probably totally aware of it. But I feel like most people wouldn't feel like they have a bunch of different personalities that are inside of them. I feel like it's not commonly understood.
Yeah.
For
me though, I feel like I can reinvent myself like over and over. You know what I mean? Like who I was even at the beginning of this podcast, it could be a totally different person in my own mind. And that's like the tricky thing about the mind is that when you really look at what is controlling it, like who is controlling who, you can never really answer it. It's like I remember an analogy to figure out how to become the Buddha, right? You have to get into a state of nirvana. But it's like you're looking for someone in your house. When you go to the attic, they go to the basement. When you go to the basement, they go to the attic. So it's like to try to achieve the state of nirvana, like you're never going to be able to do it because you're trying to do it. So it's like at the same point, like figuring out what is controlling you, you know, you can, it's really tough to figure that out. So it's like, you like to think it's yourself. And so something he said in the podcast that stood out to me was that he hopes it's not random. And he said that it is random with some schizophrenics, but I like to think that life is a little bit random. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I don't believe in karma, you know, that can maybe have something to do with like how you control yourself, you know?
Yeah. He had a weird, that was kind of a like conflicting statement there in hoping that, he said that, oh, it can't be deterministic because there's some sort of an autonomous self, but at the same time, it can't be random. But if it's not random, then it's kind of inherently deterministic. Like, you need that, like, flux of randomness in there to allow for autonomy to have any room to play. If there's no randomness, then it's all just dominoes, right? It's all kind of just falling.
Well, and to dive in a little bit more with, like, what he talks about with randomness is that there are things that captivate your interest. And there are things that don't. And so if you and I, and we were all to go through the Mall of America, or I was to go through with my wife, there are certain things that would stand out to me, and there are certain things that wouldn't. And that the things that stand out to you are not in your control.
Yeah.
That's not
look at music. Like, look at people's tastes in music. That really can determine it, because I can listen to classical music and my fiance hates it. She's like, it's squeaky. It sounds like it's just, she's not into it. And I'm like, it's melodic. It's soft. It's beautiful. She goes, no, I hate it. It sounds like a siren going off. I'm like, how does it hit your ear like that? But yeah, look at the taste in music. It's like, people can't control that either, you know?
Yeah. Well, and even just generally, he talks about just your general interests. It's like, you know, all three of us have totally different interests. And I don't really consciously control mine. In fact, since I've been studying some of this stuff, I've sort of lifted my legs up. The things that I'm interested in, I basically pursue, and I notice the things that, because if we were to all watch a speech, I would hear something and you guys wouldn't hear it. And you, you know, and so the things that stand out to me, the idea is like, what's governing that? And should I ignore it or should I pursue it? And I've more recently, I've really been trying to lift my legs up. Like if I'm interested in like real estate or reading a certain weird book or a cartoon, I try to dive more into my interests. But it's a slippery slope with the internet. Cause there are nuances between things that you're interested with and things that might be injected values or just a shady title, right? It's hard to tell the difference sometimes.
That's a little like fads. People don't say faddist enough. Like there's definitely faddists out there who just follow the trends. And that used to be a bad thing. Like people wanted originality, you know?
Mm-hmm. Original thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Original thought.
But that's a loaded term. Like, is original thought actually a real thing? Cause you know, it's a, so like talking about how our like interests are kind of preloaded into us by some sort of process, which we haven't really touched on that yet, but like,
yeah,
even getting more complicated, like now interests, like do interests drive beliefs? Do beliefs drive interests? Where do your beliefs come from? Cause a belief like really ends up, you can be interested in something, but what you believe ends up actually kind of being the hinge in the door as to whether or not you pursue that interest. Like, do I believe that pursuing an interest is worthwhile? Like you, Leland, you were talking about, you started lifting your legs up recently. Well, what is the belief system behind that? That's saying like, oh, now I have like this open door to pursue these interests. And there's like, what even put that belief system in place?
Yeah, well, so what's interesting is the beliefs are like, you know, a lot of times, and this is an idea I'm figuring out along the way, but, you know, the beliefs a lot of times are just what people tell you. And so you might be interested in like guitar. And if you're interested in guitar and you pursue it, that's awesome. But if some adult says you can't be a professional guitarist, then that's a belief that is like a belief is sort of what you think is possible, right? You know, and so those are almost man-made or constrained by boxes, but they're all almost fake. Like your beliefs are all made up.
Yeah. So you have to be the filter. You are the filter of what you believe. So you're going to, somebody tells you one thing, you have to scrutinize it. And nowadays with the internet and everything that's going on, everything is fake. Most people are like, this is not genuine. So when it is something genuine, you have to recognize it. But to apply that logic to your own ego or your own id, whatever, I don't know the real terms, but your own psyche.
Matter.
Yeah, apply it to your own psyche. And suddenly it gets really scary. Like, soul searching for yourself is a journey. But nobody tells you that it only goes down. It's like really, really tough, because when you look at someone who is successful, and maybe to compare your life is not good, but they're where you think they want to be, and then they get interviewed and they go, no, I want to do more. I want to do this. I want to do that. So it's like, then you really realize how negative people are when they do get success. So it's like, what, you know, tying into the values thing, it's like, what values do you have? And why do you have them? What beliefs do you have? Why do you have them? Is it nature versus nurture? Like, definitely you're a product of your upbringing. I mean, that's something. But I think that stupid people have smart kids, you know, and smart people have stupid kids. So, like, nobody is really held to that standard that you're the copy of your parents, you know? So it's like, it's really weird.
Well, Tony Robbins tells a story about two twins who like had an alcoholic father, and it was just like, you know, bad story. And one of them grew up to be really successful, and the other one grew up to be just like a criminal. And they asked, like, you know, what do you attribute your life to? And they both said, it's like, well, look at my father. How could you, you know?
Right.
And and that's one of those things, what, like, is it nature versus nurture? It's like, well, as soon as you have sex and you're impregnated, like, that zygote is constantly interacting with the environment.
Yep.
And so, and the way that it interacts is going to dictate a lot of the way that it's developed, obviously. So it has to be both. But that doesn't explain the twins.
You know? I mean, the case of the twins, you could just argue that, like, I mean, all it would take is some process where one twin does something better than the other one, and all of a sudden, like, there's a fracture. Or, like, the other one, you know, they get in different classrooms, and some teacher is more negative than the other teacher. You know, it's like the moment you're blast into the world, you have, no matter how similar your thumbprints are, like, you have inherently different experiences. You know, you're just always an individual.
Well, and even experiencing the same room sound, like, you know, going to the same concert, so to speak, not the same experience, right?
Here's a question. So he said in the podcast that you can't make yourself interested in something. So let's just say that that's true. Can you make someone else interested in something? Like, could I make Isaac interested in, you know, ninjutsu or whatever I was into?
Wouldn't take much.
If he didn't take to it right away, you know how, like, families are, they influence each other, and the little brother starts to like what the older brother does. You know, now he's into hip hop, and then he's in it. You know, is he just copying, or is it like, can you really not make someone interested in something?
Oh man, there's an idea where you have, like, you're born kind of with, like, temperament or like a canal of potential. You know, so you have like a window of, typically they're speaking in terms of like mood or potential or IQ, these like well-measured things, but something like an interest is less objectively measured. So if they, you could imagine there's still some sort of a window, like a frame of where you're able to slide around in terms of your interests, and that's like shaped already.
So is an open-minded person someone who can slide that frame all the way down the spectrum?
Or, I think so.
Is that a good thing, though?
So those might be two different things, being open-minded. So, like, when you're talking about, can I make somebody interested in something? So there's a – Dr. John DeMartini is one of my favorites, but he talks about everybody has their own hierarchy of values. So things that are most important and least important to you, right? And I probably talked about this on some of my other ones, my other podcasts. But, like, so if family's number one on Adam's list and he wants to be interested in something, like, I would say that you can make yourself interested in something. If family is Adam's number one value and he thinks that providing financially for his family is important, then he can link learning financial stuff that he might not be interested in to his highest value. And then he would become interested in it. But you have to, like, strategically figure out all of the benefits of building wealth or building finance. Like, that's an example. It could even be like glass blowing, right? You could even want to learn more about glass blowing because, you know, that's a career path that you want to go. And you could make other people interested in that, not necessarily because they like glass blowing, but because they like a career path to support their family, or maybe even to bond with you. Or in the example where you're saying, like, you know, a sibling's really into something or a family's really into something, the lowest sibling, the youngest sibling, could also be into that same thing, but they could be into it because it's family bonding, not because they're bored of it or they love fishing. So I always, like, I'm a huge John DeMartini fan because I think that the hierarchy of values explains a foundational level that, oh, everybody's got their own interest and that's how they filter their world. Like, when you go through the mall, a mom who's got kids is going to see strollers. A dad who is looking for a suit is going to notice Men's Warehouse and certain things, because those are because of your values list. So I sort of think you can make people interested in it, but I don't think that ultimately, like, I think people should try to understand their own hierarchy of values. and be sort of ruthless about it. The hard part is that it's hard to know about what you value versus what you think you value because you're seeing so much other stuff. Like,
you see, my values changed just this week. My number one value used to be freedom, because in order to have a family and to be able to think and all of these things, you need to be free. But now it's changed to something I call systems. So it's making systems, setting up your life for system, like having a system to go to the gym at this time of day, whatever it is. Like, now I'm obsessed, not with necessary routine, but with setting up systems, because that's how, to your point earlier about like, okay, whose attention is it? What is controlling it? It's like, the reason you ask those questions is so you can get better at controlling it, right? Like, better at your life. Well, we know that the big boys play in corporations, and the big boys are in the corporations with all the money. They're the ones ruining the planet. So it's like, is climate change a personal moral failing? Like, I don't think so. But just getting into, like, to become a better blacksmith, like, compare yourself to a blacksmith and you're at the anvil of life. And you have to bang away at this sword or dagger or whatever you're trying to make yourself. So it's like, the reason to even ask these questions is to be a better person. And I think that you can be a better person immediately. Like I said earlier, you can reinvent yourself over and over. And so your interests can change over and over. And like Isaac mentioned, that sliding window of personality, I like to think that I'm a human on the spectrum that can hit all the range. Like, why not do everything? And not to be like too candid, but that's why I'm literally like bisexual, is because I don't want to miss out on life. Like, that's part of my values in my hierarchy, is to have a good life. And I think you need to experience things to do that. So, but then it's like, you want to go through the experiences as a good person. Like, you have to be a good person, and you have to try to make yourself better. Those are the people I want to be surrounded by, are people like you, Leland, who are asking those questions, and people like you, Isaac, who are thinking about those questions and trying to drive that nail in to say, that's how you do it better. So it's like, really, it's all about self-improvement, and all this soul searching of yourself is to identify your who you are so that you can be that better person. It was like, when you go to hell, you meet the man you could have been. You know, that's like the person who shakes your hands like, dude, you could have been me, but you didn't get your act together. So it's like, how do you, you know?
Yeah, that's I always wrestle with like making like meta-ethical claims about things. Because it seems like originally people are like, the original questions come from being like blown away by just like the condition of the human experience in and of itself. So like, we are just blasted into existence and we have no idea what the hell's going on. And that's, he mentioned, Peterson mentioned awe in his speech a few times. I don't remember exactly what it was around, but like, there's a sense of awe, and you just begin inquiring kind of blindly as to how things are. And, you know, ethics definitely comes up in there, but also some of it is like, why am I even here in the first place? And that is less of a question about like how to live best and more of a question about like why live at all.
Wow. Well, right now my values are changing once again because of my son. So I think family is starting to crawl up the list.
That's kind of why I'm living.
Kid changes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting too is like, I learned this from one of the guys that, I mean, I used to own a bar. He was a John DeMartini senior level, one of those guys that's like a philosopher that goes and has a beer at 2 p.m. every afternoon. Like, you know, one of my best friends, right? But he said that when I had our kid, he said that the thing that's funny about values is they don't move all in a row. So like, you had a kid and the family doesn't, the kid doesn't go to number one and then everything else shifts down. Instead, what happens is everything gets thrown up and it gets reordered in a totally new way. And he said, he goes, the reason I'm telling you this is that you as the husband, like, you were number two on your wife's one, you were number one or number two for a really long time on her values. But now baby's number one, probably number two as well. And then her sleep, her health, all of these other things are going to be like more important than you. You're going to be like six or seven.
Yeah.
And what's interesting about the reason I really like John DeMartini is it's not about sugarcoating it. It's about understanding that your wife's values are this and you're number seven, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to be number one. You're not going to, and but also loving her for her values. Cause like, Yeah, because she's probably not number one on your list right now. You probably have to go get a job, and not you specifically, but if somebody who just had a kid, you got to go worry about other things. And so understanding that, you know, there is a structure, and then if you have a kid or a big life-changing event, everything can just kind of get reorganized.
So I have a – so like that – you saying like things getting tossed up and reorganized, that reminds me – I don't know how relevant this is going to be, but there's some psychologists out there who are theorizing that part of the strength of taking like hallucinogens and psychoactives and performing therapy is that a psychoactive actually completely shakes apart kind of like your conceptions of self and reality and things like that. And then you engage in a therapeutic setting and you're able to kind of reset it and reorganize things as you see fit.
Yeah.
I've heard that, and I've also heard some really good stuff about psilocybin and, I mean, and some other mushrooms as well that are not hallucinant, but working with the brain to grow. And so a lot of people are like stuck in trauma or can't get out of their own head. Like if you don't have a good diet and your body can't, your brain can't produce new cells and isn't producing the right type of hormones, it's really hard to get any momentum anyway. But one of the things I've heard a lot about psilocybin is that it can stimulate neuron growth for the brain. So it's really healthy for brain, for like Alzheimer's. And, you know, and I've, a lot of people have grandparents who've been affected by Alzheimer's. I would love if my parents started taking some mushrooms with the intent of, well, also like alleviating some of their stress or maybe helping them see the world differently. But also some brain growth so they can be around and be sharper.
What about like, have you heard of calcified pineal gland? So I have a buddy and he let his dad try DMT, right? Which is like this really strong one. And his dad was like, this didn't do anything for me. And he's like, what happened? Like all my other friends like blast off in outer space and you're like, nothing happened to you. So it's like, is that a calcified pineal gland? Like, do you know anything about that brain stuff, Isaac?
I mean, so DMT is a chemical that's just produced in like the synapses of your brain, and the pineal gland is largely in charge of hormonal release. So you have like this hypothalamic pituitary, loop that is in charge of a lot of hormones that can definitely affect brain functioning, but DMT is actually, it causes your brain to produce a naturally occurring chemical that's actually kind of just sitting in your brain. It's not related to your pineal gland.
Is that the chemical that comes out when you dream?
Yep. Yeah. And they think it comes out a lot when you're like having near-death experiences or actually dying. But I mean, it's hard to measure. But there actually is, I'm surprised no one has tried this yet. There's a certain, like, you can use a different MRI pulse sequence called, it's a spectroscopy. And basically they can use different frequency magnetic pulses to measure the density of chemicals in different areas of your brain. So right now, most of it is focused on like dopamine and some of these like larger, you know, serotonin, larger influence chemicals that are involved in a lot of drug trials. But it would be interesting to see someone maybe try to track down DMT in the brain while someone's dreaming or something like that.
Wow. Yeah. That's a crazy idea. So kind of to jump back to like what Jordan was talking about, one of the things that he talked about that really like hurt me was that he said people who don't listen to the calling in life, you know, to follow what they're interested in, their lives are basically destroyed. Or he said that all the people that he knew that had some terrible life now with everything bad in it that was not what they're supposed to have. And I'm trying to think of someone who like didn't follow their calling and ended up like that. And the only people I can think of that got knocked off that path, like, it was due to drug use and due to alcohol use. And it wasn't really due to them not being keen on their own intuitions. Is that calling God? You know, that's
is that calling drugs? How do you know their calling wasn't drugs? They did them so good.
They were the best.
They were the best. Yeah.
Well, so one of the things that he talks about is that, you know, the ability that you, the level that you can live properly in the world is sort of unknown. And so you don't know how much you are screwing up. Like, and this isn't really even just about religion. Like, this is just general with life. You don't know, you have 70,000 thoughts a day. right? How do you know what are the best 70,000? Have you practiced all of them? Are you aware of any of the, you know, so.
Wow.
It's, you have, you're unaware of how much better you could be thinking if you were only exposed to those new thoughts. And that's one of those things that's like, well, shit, what thoughts am I aware of? Am I filtering them properly? And who's having better thoughts? Who's living a life that I want? What are they thinking about?
Yeah,
what am I
that wanting? Naval, Naval guy, how do you say his name?
Naval Ravikant.
Yeah, Naval. He was like, sit back and observe your thoughts, which I thought was interesting. You know, it's like take a back seat to your own brain and just watch where you go. And then when you're done, you're like, wow, we drove all over the course. Or you're like, dang, we just crashed straight away. Like,
yeah, so I was, I'd be interested. I haven't talked much with people about this, but there's like, for as long as I can remember, I've always had like an internal dialogue, you know, like I always have had like spoken words going through my mind. And just this year, I started taking up meditation pretty regularly. And one day I had like a breakthrough and all of a sudden my mind just went completely quiet, where I like did not have a dialogue going through my head at all. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced that. And it was weird. I like kind of came out of it and was able to get up and like walk around and look at things without having words going through my mind, which was a very unique experience. And I don't know if that qualifies as a thought anymore. Like, it seems like thought is always defined as like you having this kind of internal dialogue. Whereas like, maybe a thought is just something much more like,
well,
I don't know. It's weird.
Sorry to throw a curveball your way, but like, do you have thoughts or do thoughts have you? Cause thoughts just come in your head. But there's also an active component sometimes, but a lot of times thoughts just come in your head. Like,
right.
I don't
it's both. Like, you know, you have thoughts and they get in there, you know, like you can definitely focus your thought pattern. Like he says, you sit down to do homework and you're going to do an hour of homework, but you don't actually do it. You go, what happened? Yeah. Like, that's also you like getting in there, I think, because you're daydreaming about the squirrel out the window or whatever. But I think that it's both. And I think that that the ones that come themselves and that you don't have to force out are the most profound. Like, those are where you find your true self, I think, is in the subconscious sub-personalities that just pop up.
What about those, like, moments, though, where you have, like, they talk about metacognition, where you, and it's kind of like a practice trait where, like, you are able to self-regulate, and so, like, you can catch yourself going on some sort of a negative tangent, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's a negative thought. So that's, like, you have a thought above your thought, and that seems like, that's not something that's just popping up. That's like a trained, like, overthought, you know, something that is like down regulating the thoughts that are just kind of bubbling to the surface.
Yeah. Well, the other weird thing is that nerve cells that fire together wire together. So if you have the same thought
learning
over and over again, then those will just fire. Like, they're just, I'm, you know, and you see it a lot with like, I mean, the stereotypical would be like an abusive relationship. It ends, but the person who was the victim still has the same fear patterns or the same, like, it's nerve cells that fire together, wire together. So when you become meta and you're like, whoa, that was a weird thought. You know, you look at it like a bird sort of floating across the sky. It's not you, right?
Yeah.
It's just, it's
just that makes sense. Yeah. And that's supported by the neuroscience. Like you're, even physically, your thoughts are like a river. Like the neurons are firing in chains, and in that same way, your thoughts are firing in chains. Like, they're physically connected in your brain. It's not just some intangible ether out there. There's like a physical process occurring.
Well, and what's weird too about the neuroscience is, you know, they haven't studied a lot of monks as much as just normal people, and so what can you do with conscious control over your mind or habitual thought patterns or, you know, and I'm just as guilty as anybody else is just scrolling my phone and mindlessly, you know.
That's why I want systems as my highest value. It didn't go there because I liked it there. It went there because it has to be there. Because if you don't have those systems, you're not going to be productive. You're not going to become that person that you want to be. And it's like, I have those goals in life. And asking these deep prodding questions helps people get there, I think. So it's important to think about this stuff. But it's also important to realize that, like, you're so powerful. In my mind, every individual is the most powerful person in the universe, because the universe wouldn't exist without them here from their perspective. Like, as far as I understand, when you die, I've never seen anyone come back and tell me how good it was or whatever. But, like, most people say they just go blank and it goes black. So if that is true, then, and you are the universe, right? You're a manifestation of heavy metals that were brewed in the suns that exploded long in the eons ago. Great. You are the universe. Now, what do you do with yourself? Like, you're so powerful. You're a lightning rod. That's how I like to think of myself, a lightning rod. And that those bubbling thoughts are the universe, like, striking me. You know what I mean? And maybe yeah. They're coming from my cerebral cortex, and because of my fluid in this position, that's why I think that way, or whatever the case may be. But I like to think that it's I am the universe manifested, right? So my unmanifested thoughts that are just there are like a direct communication to the heart of the universe and what it's trying to tell me.
If that's true, then so is it telling you where you need to, what you need to know right now, or is it aligning itself as maybe confrontation, or maybe is it aligning itself in front of you in order to help you grow to become like more?
I think it's aligned in chaos, which is the nature of the universe. So it itself has no bearing. Like, it's not telling you what you need to know. It's also not telling you what you don't need to know. It's just telling you stuff, because that's existence. Like Isaac was saying, we're forced into this existence. And I think that those, you know, they're not there serving a purpose other than that they exist. So it's kind of like a dumb way to answer your question, but I think that it's important to listen to them because they're so profound, but at the same time, like, they're not all serving your best interests for sure. Like, they're for surely not.
Yeah. And there's some, like, to take it even more, like, this might be a bit cold and calculated and super materialistic, but there's like some physicists who have argued that the entire process of evolution is really just, and even consciousness is just a byproduct of like our specific planet finding a way to effectively like consume and discard energy. So like the entire process of life is really just like balancing. It's like homeostasis of the planet is what the entire purpose of life is. And our consciousness is just kind of like an excrement. It's like I've heard like the analogy of like a foam riding on a wave, and we just like crash into shore. Like, you're just the foam. Your consciousness is the foam on the wave.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, that could totally make sense. It's not useful because you got to figure out a way for it to be meaningful. I mean, you're here and here's
you do or you don't.
You got to figure out. Or you can just sit there and be, but it, like, logically, it's like, yeah, that actually makes total sense. Like, why wouldn't that be the way that it would be?
Yeah.
But go ahead, Isaac.
No, you go ahead. That's fine.
If you were like the ruler of Earth, you're the leader. Well, how do you want your people to think? You know, I'd want them to think like I think David or Leland thinks, that he's always trying to get to a better spot and control those thoughts. Like, I want the populace of people who can control themselves, who have willpower. And it's like, people have discipline, but they only use their willpower for like 2 seconds. Like, willpower is such a powerful thing. You don't have to have it all the time. You only need it briefly. It's like, get up off the couch, get in the shower, go to work. Like, it doesn't take a lot of willpower, you know, of time. It doesn't take a lot of time to do that, but, you know, I'd want that type of populace that's like looking for those moments to use willpower and looking for the moment to use willpower to affect their own thought patterns for the better. It's like those 70,000 thoughts a day, there's got to be a combination that is optimal.
I would argue that the current political system does not want thinking individuals.
There's an interesting rift right now going on between the US and China, which by contrast will force individual thinking, I think. I don't know how it won't, because you're you're allying yourself against people controlling thought. Little bit of a side tangent, but
yeah,
but there's this is actually
for good and evil on earth. Well, and we're the good guys.
This is actually kind of a, this is actually
everyone thinks that.
Well, you have to convince
your people. America. I mean, consciously.
You have to convince your people, no matter what your country is, that that's the story.
That's true. Yeah,
you know, I was thinking you're the bad about guys. This culture stuff, right? It's like, are you nature or nurture? Are you a product of the culture? And then I got to thinking about this cultural appropriation. How people are all upset. It's like, human culture is my culture. So how can you be mad if I'm like, love tacos or whatever the case may be? Like, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but like, American culture to me is vanilla. It tastes pretty bland.
There is no culture in America. It's not there.
America's like, too big to have a culture. Like, we've got cultures in New Orleans, we've got cultures in New York, in LA.
Well, also, like, by the time America developed, we were founded on immigrants. I mean, if anything, our culture is Protestant. Like,
yeah. Well, actually, no, we're pagan. We're Dutch. New York. The reason that we did so well was because the Dutch would say, "We don't care where you're from. We'll just do business with you."
Right. Yeah.
If you're honest, we'll do
but business. I mean, America was founded on people that came over here because they weren't able to express their religion strong enough. So, like, the Protestants came over here and they dressed for all intents and purposes, covered head to toe. The women barely had any skin exposed. Like,
well, so here's just an interesting, like,
parallel. That's our culture.
To the U.S. and the China thing is that in the U.S., you know, we're more individualistic, but just tying into the values with what we were talking about with Jordan Peterson is like, we sort of have this accepting thing that people have their own values and that those are important. And what's going on in China, at least the way it's being framed, is that that's not as important as the collective.
You mean to say economy?
Well, no, I mean,
it's all economy.
It's economy, but economy is also like, there's a lot that goes into economy. It's, you know, defensive resources, access to things.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, not only that, the underpinning of the economy is people, and people, if you function in an individualist society versus a collectivist society, the economy is going to hinge very differently.
The issue, well, part of the issue with saying the economy, this will be a tangent, is that it doesn't make sense to say the economy and decouple from China. You would double down because it would be good for, but and we're not doing that because I guess you could make the argument long term that it's bad, but those are all like.
Sorry, so just to clarify, you're saying that decoupling China and American economies?
So right now, China does most of our manufacturing, and we're in the process of decoupling. They won't be doing most of our manufacturing going forward because they don't seem to be honest business players, is the way it's being framed. But they're also cheaper than not decoupling, so it doesn't make sense. It would, in theory, hurt our economy. You can make the argument that in the long term it's better because those are all rules, and you know, but it's not a straightforward economy decision. It's probably going to hurt the economy.
I don't see that going good, you know.
Yeah, I guess I was saying just the premise of
it. There are so many levers to pull to think that anybody has a grasp on the ways you can squeeze or create leverage in a specific situation, or how long we've been, it's just like, it's naive.
Well, yeah, this is what I was getting at. That there's like, so there, you're right on with the issue that it's extremely complicated, but then also there's like a misunderstanding so that the people putting pressure on China are under the assumption that their economy functions and has the same premises as ours does. But like I was saying, they work on a collectivistic mentality and we work on an individualistic mentality, which breeds two very different workforces, two different like housing scenarios, family structures, dependency, like, and so you can't like pressure one system that's extremely like the entire foundation of it is extremely different compared to ours and like pressure them in a way that we think we wouldn't want to be pressured and expect them to behave the same way.
Yeah, they're totally different from a culturistic standpoint. I think
they do some stuff better than us. Like they work harder than us and their ecosystem at their work is not as good as ours. Like, they definitely have a different, you know, work culture, but they work harder and they get more work done. I'm worried that some Chinese guy is going to come to Austin, start blowing glass, and going to put everyone out of business. You know what I mean? Like, those dudes work that hard.
South Park is blown two at a time.
Yeah, they do, South man. South
Park has become weaponized propaganda for the
U.S. Oh, yeah. They got banned.
They got banned in China. The NBA got banned in China.
I think that's good, though, because it just shows how little chips they have left to play with.
That's true.
Well, what's interesting is, I mean, tying it back to just this whole, you know, this whole thing is, can you jam thoughts into people from top down? Isaac saying that they're, you know, they're more collectivist. It's like their government is more collectivist. Does that go against human nature? And how long can you go against human nature before there's a backlash?
Oh, I don't think it goes against human nature at all. Like, three quarters of the global population works under a collectivist premise. Well, so, like, most people, it's not uncommon for collectivist, people living
out. But there's a difference between working under collectivist government situation and humans being collectivist.
Oh, sorry. No, I wasn't saying – when I said work under, I didn't mean under the government. I mean their familial structures are largely collectivistic. So it's not uncommon for an entire family, from the grandparents to the grandchildren, to all be living in one household. That's way more common across the globe than America.
You know, have you ever heard of Nassim Taleb? So he's a guy I really like. He talks about that you want to be with with your immediate family. You're a communist, right?
What?
Yeah, with your immediate family, you're a communist. You know, the dad and parent makes all the decisions. Everybody, you know, and then as you go and you control, like, your neighborhood, you have less control. And as you go to your city, you have less control. And as you're overseeing a nation, you want to be, you know, on the total other end of the spectrum, that the smaller the group, the more control there is. That's how, you know, and so both perspectives are totally fair. They're just on different levels. Right.
I think there's, like, I don't know. We have like
the New highest. New York and Montana can never have the same laws. Just doesn't make sense. You know? And that's totally fine.
That's why we have Electoral College, so that all the people in LA and New York don't make all the decisions, even though I feel like my vote doesn't count in a blue state, you know, or a red state. I feel like it goes blue or goes red.
That gets to a larger issue of, like, how
most people feel
overarching the federal regulations are, right? So, like, the government, you pay federal tax dollars, and then the federal government can hold your tax dollars hostage to your state if they don't abide by a certain, like, educational or highway or whatever have you, like, laws. The federal government can be like, we're going to withhold, like, $500,000 if you don't change your driving over the limit level to 0.08.
Well,
they've done that numerous times.
So then
the state has to follow suit to the federal government, even though it's already the people in the state paying federal tax dollars. The federal government is now holding their money hostage. No.
So what's even more interesting, because we're talking about controlling thoughts, they do that with the public education system. So, we'll give you 15% of your funding from the federal government, but here's some of the curriculum that you need to teach.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Which.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is,
in my opinion, the federal government should have two roles. It should have protecting our country and from outside countries, and then interstates. That's it. They should be able to connect our states with highways. Those are the two roles they should have. Basically, that's it.
Easy, Isaac. Don't go overboard with what the government can do. No, but
government's different, but I'm saying the federal government, if we're all paying into a system, those are two things that everyone should be able to just be like, all right.
That's what gets me morally. That's why I feel like you can't, even if you force yourself to have good thoughts and you're a good person, but you live in the United States, you can never truly be divine, because you pay taxes. And you very well know that those tax dollars buy bullets that go blow kids up in Afghanistan. And I've asked the church, how do I reconcile myself? And they go, oh, you thought you'd get into heaven because you're good? No, you get into heaven because you accept Jesus in your heart as your savior. So it's like, they act with immunity. They spend our money like making me an immoral person by proxy. And so, I mean, the best thing to do is to turn around and realize that you have the power to control your own personal space and your life, at least in this moment. I'm not imprisoned. You know, that could change shortly after this podcast. But
can I ask you a question?
You have to craft yourself to be a better person. That's the revenge.
I'm just curious as to, because everything that you've said could be true, but what you've said is also a story, and it's only one side of what could be a story about the role that we've played.
I love the idea of forcing yourself to have good thoughts.
Yeah. Well, and even like, and who are you to think that thoughts are good? Like, yeah. Why is it good to wish good for somebody when all of the best things that have come in my life has come from struggle?
Right. Yeah, like, I can see it in my fiance and I. She lets the baby get coddled. She picks him up every second he cries. I let him struggle in the chair for a little bit. I'm like, let the man see what life's really like.
Well, there's something to that, though. Like, yeah, there's the argument that, like, if you are coddled your whole life and then all of a sudden a big storm comes. Imagine a tree. Tree's been sheltered, and then a big storm comes after, like, 25 years. The tree is not going to bend. It's going to fucking snap. But the tree that's been bending and hitting the fucking ground, getting leaves torn off, and it survives, that fucker, you can throw anything at it. That tree's ready.
Well, I 100% agree with that. And that's one of the reasons why you want to encourage, you like, people need to get in the habit of going out there and getting hurt, or like testing the wind, so to speak, or growing, like
getting uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, Jordan Peterson calls it like you go into the chaos and you go figure out, you know, go make yourself out of the chaos. Enter the unknown, right? And
yeah.
Back in the day, it was like a tribe going out hunting, but now it's, you know, it's an intellectual unknown. It might be studying something new, or putting yourself on stage, or maybe doing a weird podcast. Like there's a bunch of, you know, it's putting yourself out there. And that's it. Like the one thing that I wish for my kids is like, I really hope that they struggle and that they're tough. So when they like come up against something, that it doesn't wreck them. Right. Like, that's what you want. You don't want.
I have a lot of friends that have those successful parents that are building skyscrapers and they have all this money. They don't give them a dime. They don't help them at all. In fact, when they're kids, they'll take their toys away when they're naughty and they'll throw them away. You know, they really, they drive it home like you have to be formidable. You know, Jordan Peterson talks about being formidable. And that's something that's like, I seek it. You know, like you seek a good thought, I seek diversifying myself to be more formidable. And it's like, that's what I wish for my kids exactly too. It's like, grow up with some scars and then you have some experience, because experience trumps everything.
Yeah.
You're nothing without your experience. And that's what separates these billionaires from regular people, is their purely their experience. Some of it's luck, but a lot of it is deterministic, because they get up at the same time every day. They do this routine. They have these systems, even if they're only at 1% improvement. Elon Musk talks about this. It's like, over a long enough period of time, 0.1% improvement gets you to 100%. Like, you got to keep going. And yeah. So when you're crafting yourself, like in the day-to-day moment, it's okay to just improve a little bit. Don't put sugar in your coffee or whatever you're trying to do to get healthier or get smarter. Like, just do a little thing. I think that's the secret. Like,
I heard a great saying that was, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly.
Right.
Yeah, so that sounds kind of backwards, because you always hear anything worth doing is worth doing well. But if it's worth doing, if you get up in the morning and don't feel like doing it, just do it shittily, at least. Just still fucking do it, you know?
Yeah.
That doesn't mean don't give it your 100% on other days, but like, fucking keep at it. Even if you're going to do a shit job, like, do it.
That's how I reconcile like being a terrible person, because I'm a U.S. citizen. Like, you just got to try a little harder to improve yourself every day, and then you're the revenge. Like, that's what Brother Ali said. He's like, I don't need revenge. Me being here is the revenge. That's like,
yeah, Honey Boo Boo set the bar real low.
But to kind of like touch back to the podcast quick, I want to ask you guys a personal question. When you guys feel the calling to what you're interested in, You know, is that God? Is that God calling you? I think I know Isaac's answer, but like, what do you think, Leland?
I mean, Jordan Peterson answers it pretty well. It's like, well, what do you mean by God? And does it really matter?
Yeah.
Like, I've found that I'm interested in certain things and that my life improves if I pursue them. And that might be like, yeah, like right now I just hired somebody to teach me about like real estate and I'm having a blast and it, you know, it's uncomfortable. I'm asking questions. I ask tons of just dumb questions. But I kind of made at least for now, I'm committed to sort of pursuing the things that are the most interesting to me and doing them poorly to kind of tie back to the other quote where it's like, who cares? You know, I'll make a phone call about real estate. It'll be really shitty and we probably won't make this deal, but we're going to learn and it's fun. So, so the God thing's so weird because you have to figure out what people mean by it. And it's just a totally different, it's bigger than just that question. And just to throw a curveball, it's like, I really like simulation theory. That makes a lot of sense to me. That doesn't negate any of the teachings that John DeMartini that have worked for me that like, you know.
Yeah. I like the microverse that we're just a smaller part of another molecule that's part of something else that's bigger.
Well, so like, just a fractal.
Yeah, if you've ever studied the simulation, if you've ever studied vortex math, it's a bounded infinity. I could nerd out about this for way longer, and I know
there's different amounts of infinity. Now that's weird.
Well, like
that doesn't seem. We work with that in statistics. They like when you have a population measurement, you assume that you're measuring into infinity, but yet you get a bell curve with different levels of infinity. So you get right. Different probabilities of infinities, basically.
Yes, yeah.
So it is God.
It's just a statistical.
So yes, God. God, yes.
No. Yeah.
But okay, so
I think it's a loaded question. I agree. It's a loaded question. Which
I don't think
ask.
About it that way.
The calling thing, like, I don't know. There's like, I think anyone can recognize in themselves, like when they go towards a calling, they see like the pragmatic kind of cash value. And I don't mean cash in an explicit like money, but like the tangible, like real world effect of their decision. And they can calculate that out versus like a driving passion that has a lot of uncertainty behind it. And I faced this when I was going to graduate school. I got into a philosophy program and a psychology program. I knew I was bound by location because of my son and I have all my family here. And it was going to be hard to find a job in philosophy, even though that is actually what, like, to my core, I define myself as a philosopher. I knew psychology is frugal. There's lots of job opportunities. I can stay local. And I ended up going with that. I'm still passionate about it. I care. I want to help people and do therapy. But it ended up being like I got pulled towards the more pragmatic end of it. And I'm sure if I didn't have a kid, it might be different. But in the end, those are like you have multiple drivers and then you just got to make a choice. And there's like no right or wrong answer there. There's not like a divine intervention. You just end up having to fucking choose something.
Yeah.
Yeah. The weird part would be that like you said that it's more, what'd you say, more pragmatic. It was a better choice.
Pragmatic, like, yeah.
But that was based off of beliefs that could or could not be true. And so the
people, you can't have a true belief. A belief is just right.
Well,
I don't think.
Well, it would be. If you define pragmatic as like more profitable, and you're like, okay, well, I could make more money doing that, then you could define.
Well, it wasn't just a money decision. It had to do with geography and being
close
to my family and things like that. So.
But the really like diehard people who are the, you know, the religious people would say the pragmatism from the choice comes from your gut instinct. It's like the thing that glitters or the thing that is, that moves you. Scott Adams writes Dilbert and he says that when he thinks about cartoons, he watches the news until he feels a reaction. He'll hear something and he'll be like, oh, that was funny. It in my stomach, it moved me.
And
I'm not like saying, I'm not picking on you particularly.
No, lay it down, man. Lay it down.
Oh, no, but I think that that's part of the hard part. It's that, like, it's having the faith that the thing that you want to pursue will turn out in a way that makes sense. But also, mm-hmm. like, even, like, if I was you, I'd be like, fuck no, this made a – it was a way better decision because your family's probably your highest value. And because of that, there's 10 reasons why that's the best choice. Like, you made that choice based off your highest values. Like, that's what John would say. It's like, you made that choice clearly because of your highest values. What your highest
value? Yeah, my highest value is my son. That's really what it ended up being.
Exactly. So it's like,
but in my heart, you know, in my mind, I definitely went through the process of thinking, well, if I just work hard, if I apply myself to philosophy, I don't necessarily need to do philosophy when I'm done. I can apply it to many things. I can figure out a way to make this work, but there was less assuredness in that decision.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's really impactful when you have these decisions and you just focus. Like it, like Isaac said, it almost doesn't matter which one you choose, but as long as you focus on that one and improve on it, it will end up in a good place. Like you'll end up with some, you know, some good experience. But that choosing that one thing, I think, is why I look to myself to see what's going on in my head, is to figure out what is that one thing. It's almost like reverse engineering. I want to be this person, so I have to do this, and I have to do that, I have to do that, and I get all the way down to the bottom, and it's like, what is the one thing I'm supposed to do right now? And there's a book, I can't remember who wrote it, I just read it the other day, but it's about figuring that out, like, what's the one thing I need to do right now to get better, to get to that point in philosophy or wherever I want to go with my life. And I think that that's definitely driven by external forces in my case, like that one thing. Almost seems like God came and hit me on the head. I don't want to believe that because I like to take credit for my own actions a lot. So I don't know what you guys do. What's your one thing, Leland, that you focus on right now?
So like I would, learning is probably my highest value. Family's number one, but like I've learned to, like, I play with them a little bit where it's like, I need to learn, so let's learn things that can help the family. And so I try to, like, hit two birds with one stone. But, like, if I go a day without learning, I go insane. Like, we did a couple days where we were traveling, and I was with the kids, and we were in airports, and, like, I couldn't listen to the things that I was listening to at the time. And
negative? Do you feel like you're not improving?
I just get super antsy. I need to learn something new, think about something new or different.
That seems to me like evolutionary trait. Like,
what does that say about a drive? What does that say about a drive when you feel like, when you feel pulled towards something and you're not able to, like, go with it at every moment, that it causes anxiety? Is there something in there that, like, maybe
so
isn't the right way?
I think
just to be critical. I'm just being critical.
No.
Get the wheels turning.
No. I think it's totally fair. I look at it as like, we need to change the way that we live this trip, or we need to do better to build it in because this isn't sustainable. Like, I couldn't live 10 days like this or 20 days like this in a row and not freak out. My wife knows that too. It's like, I love you, I need space, or I love you, like, leave me alone. Let me watch my show. So I think that it's more about understanding myself and structuring my life in a way that allows me to live. Dude, John DeMartini says, understand your three highest values and outsource everything else. And I've been like actively pursuing that for a really long time.
No, that's the secret to money is people. Like, if you want to make more money, you need to leverage other people's time.
Well, now you can do leverage with podcasts or YouTube videos or paid ads, or you can do leverage with people or finance. There's all sorts of leverage in the world today.
Yeah.
Once you listen to the rest of Naval's podcast, you'll hear him talk about this. That's a really good podcast for what to think if you want to learn how to create wealth. Mm. I mean, he was a poor guy in India.
There's so many options to that. I feel like so many people have different ideas on how to create wealth, how to live well. And this was really what blew me away from religion, was that I learned how strongly convicted everyone in religion is to their own belief and how diverse and disparate their beliefs can be. And I thought, like, if so many people can be so strongly convicted to something that is so different and none of them have proof for, how can any of it be true?
God is the highest value are the scariest ones.
Here's an interesting twist on religion. Naval says that not everything can be taught, but everything can be learned. And I think that that's true with religion and spirituality and whatever game we're playing, and that people try to teach it and that just doesn't work. Like,
right. You have to experience it. You have to experience it.
And you can't explain stuff. Not that
Isaac's not a spiritual man. I know this. He's not a necessarily believer in God, but I know he's had spiritual experiences.
I have. I'm agnostic.
Yeah.
I'm agnostic. Yeah. I've had profound experiences. I've had epiphanies. I've had plenty of shit like that. I feel like I can deduce it in a lot of ways to, you know, all of the classical physical arguments, but also I have an admiration for seeing the inspired and looking at people just doing crazy, artistic, weird, fun, risky shit and just recognizing for what it is as like innately human, innately awesome. And I don't need something like guiding me in the sky to appreciate that or say like, yeah, this is the key. I can just look at it and take it for what it is.
But how is that different than how is that different than?
Well, because I'm not overlaying a construct.
Is your perception of other people, and I wasn't raised religious, so I'm just asking how you think about it, but do you think that other people think that there's a guy in the sky, or do you think that they're referring to the same awe experiences that you are?
I don't doubt that there are some more heavy-thinking individuals in religion who understand that God is maybe more of an it than a guy or whatever. It's some sort of like ethereal being that maybe we get like dropped back into or like some abstract concept that is not personified.
But yeah, it's not a guy with a beard on a cloud.
Your cookie cutter religious individual is gonna be thinking that God is a fucking man with a beard. Like that is, you talk to them and they speak that way. Like God is going to judge me. What does he think of me? As though God has like a specific cognition about
me. So can I explain how Jordan Peterson explains the judgment thing? Because I actually really like this.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard this. So again, but he says that like, so one of the things that we need to do when we're living is we need to have an ideal. So there's Isaac right now, but there's Isaac who he wants to be, somebody better who he is right now. And that there's a gap between where you are right now and where you would strive to be. They sort of, depending on who you talk to, like religion, some people call that Jesus, the ideal, but there's a gap between where you are and where you want to be. So whenever there's a gap, there's an eternal judge, because however you behave, it's short of where you need to be. And so it's judging you and telling you what you need to do. And like, that's where the concept of the internal judge comes. You can be better than you are, and there's a gap. People weren't dumb. They were actually pretty sharp.
Oh, yeah, no. Sure, yeah. So this sounds a lot like, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Platonic idea of the forms. So Plato had this idea of the forms where everything, like, there is a certain essence of the tree. There's tree-ness that the tree is always aiming at.
Yep, it's the purest form, so to speak, right?
Yeah, but this is an ideal for all trees. And what you just said sounds entirely egotistical in that it's aiming towards this idea that there is some form of Isaac and not some form of humans, which are two very different arguments. It's saying that like I should be channeled towards the ideal of myself instead of channeled towards the ideal of humanity.
The salvation is in the individual, not in the state. Yeah. The salvation is in Isaac. It's in Adam. It would be in me. It's not in the U.S. government.
Right? Well, in that case, I can tell you exactly who the eternal judge is. It's my own fucking anxiety.
so that's part of the game too, though. It's like, you should figure out who the right judge is. Because if you have the wrong judge, then that might be, and I'm not picking on you, this is just general.
How do you get a bad judge? Absolutely, go for it.
That might be one of the reasons why you're suffering. generally, because
so who is where is there like a list?
Well, so like, I mean, you'd want to figure.
I guess I'm not understanding because it's like a very new abstract concept. So I need a little bit more.
So I read a bunch of books. I really like Tim Ferriss. I really like Tony Robbins. I pick apart a lot of the ways that they think, and then if I think certain ways, then I know that there are better ways to think, and that there's a gap between, hey, this challenge happened, and I'm like sulking, and really what I should do is stand up and fucking go make the phone call or do whatever it is. And so like, this is what's super funny. Like people, like the mental health conversation to me won't make progress because the way it's framed, like, it should be more like mental fitness. There are 70,000 mm-hmm. thoughts a day. What are the right thoughts? Who's doing well in life? How do we define what's doing well in life?
Yeah. What exercises do they do?
Well, part of that's understanding your highest values, because if you don't understand your highest values and you're trying to get people to fix their life, but you're just injecting your values into them, it's just not going to work.
So yeah, absolutely. I think that's right. Therapy does focus a lot on like, you should not project your beliefs, culture, values, religion, anything onto the client. You should really kind of open the door to them and allow them to come forward and help them probe. So you're kind of like a guide on their own river. You know, you're just putting along and you say, hey, what do you see over here? What, how does this relate to you? What do you assess that as? Where, how does it relate to your life? What do you want out of it? If this ain't nothing, then you fucking move on and find the next thing. Like,
but isn't that the crazy thing about life though, is that you have to be all of those things for yourself, and you have to be them too. Like, you have to guide your own boat before you can guide someone else's, you know? So it's interesting to me how people say, oh, fake it till you make it. But then you go to the top people and they're like, I still have no idea what I'm doing. It's like, the reason is because you're never going to be perfect. Like, you're never going to master that boat. You're never going to sail perfectly. But to Leland's point, like, there's always a better way to do it. And I think getting there is a lot easier than people make it sound.
Well, I want to be careful. Like, we've said like better and good and like
it's feel all based better. On values, right?
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, also like we have, if here's a concept. So if every time we feel better, I've felt better many times in life. I've felt like I've made progress. There's still the next point where I feel like I'm not doing well. Are we really doing better? Like, or is it just that you constantly chase something every time you get something?
No.
Like, it's not, there's no like ideal of better. It's just that like you keep desiring. And some people desire materials. Some people desire deeper recognition of their emotions. Some people desire better relationships. Some people desire better footwear. Like, I don't fucking know what the answer is. I like, you just keep like pursuing every time you finish something else.
So yeah. John DeMartini says,
what is best? I guess I'm asking like, what is best?
Well, so it's that. John says that you've got your hierarchy of values and that there's a difference. So say that you've like number one on your hierarchy of values is studying philosophy. Isaac, let's just mm-hmm. hypothetically.
Yeah. Yeah.
How to learn. That'd be crazy. So, you will basically do whatever you can in order to do that. God damn it.
Okay.
Totally lost my train of thought seeing your cat jump around in the background.
Sorry. I've tried to throw him down a couple times. He's persistent. He's harassing my snake. I can actually just shift like that, then it won't. There.
All right, Adam, jump in. Save me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so...
So is it all here's a question. Is it all relativistic then? Like there's not actually a goal.
I mean, best is
not actually a goal. Like, it's just a feeling that you keep chasing.
All right. Yeah, so I got it. No, so
okay, go ahead.
If you're pursuing your highest value, number one or number two, you'll pursue and you'll go through challenges because it's important to you and that the pros and the cons or the hurdles won't stop you. But if you're pursuing things that are in your lowest values, the hurdles will stop you. So if you're hitting hurdles that are stopping you, you're doing the wrong things.
Like, right, sure. This all sounds like very like common. This is like human behavior. Like this happens whether or not the person is.
Yeah, but most people won't ask themselves if they're doing the wrong things. They'll say, this is my job. and it's not working and I'm sad. And
then they just live miserably. But then the person who does ask themselves that, the point I'm making is the person who asks themselves that moves, they move on to the next thing, and then they're still inquiring. And then there's another thing. If it's not the job, it's something else. And if it's not that, it's something else.
Be done working,
just like wondering where.
Yeah.
It seems like the answer is actually when you.
Sorry, go ahead.
It seems like the answer is actually not assessing value or thought at all. Like this essence of letting go and saying it's well enough and I'm going to pursue exactly where I'm at. And this like constant drive for assessing what I need, what I want, where I should be is actually a driver for a lot of like existential despair and angst and pain and anxiety.
Saying where you should be are injected values. So that's you looking on the internet and saying that this person has this house and car and I should have it and therefore I'm sad that I don't. But what John would say is that if you really understand yourself and fishing is your highest value and you're fishing, you're not going to be sitting there on Instagram thinking that you wish you had a Rolex. And, you know, that if you understand yourself and you're pursuing your three, none of the shoulds are injected. Those aren't your values. Cause if you're doing your,
but what should you do when you're done fishing? I mean, at that point you're like, do you just go back out and fish again? Cause it seems like there's always a should, like I have to do something next. Unless it's kill myself, then that's the end game.
It's interesting you said I have to do something next, because whether we like it or not, right, time is moving forward. So this is a bit of a tangent, but I have this crazy theory.
Do it.
The reason that the universe is expanding is because it has more time. That is like the momentum of it. You know what I mean? So like as time goes on, the universe is expanding, right? And then now where we are now, the universe has more time that has passed. So therefore it's expanding faster. I mean, it's just a crazy thought. I don't know if there's any scientific backup for that at all. Probably not, but.
Well, you got to like say that a little slower.
Thought. So
lay it down for me.
Okay. Time is always moving forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's the year 1000. Well, we know that in the year 2000, that's going to be another 1,000 years. That's a 1,000 year difference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So because of that amount of time has passed, it is adding momentum to the expansion of the universe. So the reason the universe is expanding faster and faster instead of slowing down or staying constant is because of the more time it has to play with.
Just but the irony of that is that as the objects speed up, time moves slower relative to that object.
But outside the universe is where...
I just think all the science that people say that we understand this stuff is questionable at best.
Yeah, for sure. This is totally speculation.
Hey, it's still fun. It's good.
Well, the universe stuff too, but like, Adam.
Well, they have measured that the universe has been consistently expanding, and then it's actually increasing in its expansion. Well, and you can tell that because of the way the light refracts off of planets. So as something is moving towards
that they
you,
say that.
Well, no. If you so imagine this,
it's gonna be
so because of the wavelengths of light. Blue wavelengths are shorter, red wavelengths are longer. So when something is moving
with blue and red wavelengths, so they can tell when planets are moving forward. And
yeah, because when it's moving forward, the light bouncing off of it is blue, so it's shorter.
I have a super nerdy dark side of me, so I've heard that.
All right.
But one of the things that's just like interesting is like even Adam was talking about it with, you know, how much he was saying America might not be the most positive place. They're all stories that we've heard. We haven't heard all the stories. NASA saying that planets are doing this and that they expect that. I mean, even global warming, it's like we've been measuring things for 30 years or since 1970. And 90% of the temperature things are around which country? Do you guys know?
China?
No, the United States. And you know what they say? That the world's getting cooler. It's not
that's,
that
it, that's, saying, tough, that's saying, tough not to crack.
No, the thing is, it's just... About any prediction that goes out that far, you can't predict for inventions.
Sure, the planetary observations are not predictions, though. They're actual
measurements
that have already occurred.
Global warming more than anything else. I see you, Adam.
What did you write? I didn't see what you wrote.
So we're gonna we gotta wrap up here. Adam's got to Adam's got to finish up. So, totally all over the place, but I love it. I thought it was awesome. Any final thoughts to wrap up? Maybe related to thoughts having us or us having thoughts or just anything generally.
Yeah, just try to control yourself in the moment and use your willpower sparingly because it's very valuable and you do have it and you're a very powerful person.
Drive fast and take chances.
Oh, God, I love it. I'm not going to add either of those. Those are perfect. All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks.
See you, man. This was a